Chapter 5. Not much for a conversation. The twins lead us through the twisting corridors of the sub-basement. Soon, we're outside the conference room. Malcolm arrives at the same time from a different hallway and waves to us. The twins dart inside, probably worried about being late, while the good men and I linger outside. Malcolm puts a gentle hand on my shoulder. "How you holding up, Six?" I manage a smile. "I'm hanging in there." I glance at Sam, and the smile doesn't seem so forced anymore. "Your son's helping me keep it together." Sam blushes and turns away from his dad a bit. Malcolm pats him on the back. "Good, good," he says. "In times like these, we need to lean on each other." "How's Marina?" I ask Malcolm. The last I saw of her, he was wheeling her into the cabin on a gurney. "The medics say her vitals are strong, and she woke up a little while ago to take some food," Malcolm replies. "John healed her, yes, but when the damage is that severe, you don't want to rush anything. She's resting." "Six was asking about Lawson," Sam says to his dad, lowering his voice. He looks at me. My dad was with Walker's people at Ashwood until they all had to evacuate. "Then you were... where was it?" "Liberty Base." "I met the president," Malcolm says with an amused smile. "He told me he was a big fan of my papers on intergalactic communication. Quite the skilled bullshitter." "The president, is he here now?" I ask. "No. I left Liberty Base in a hurry to reconnect with you guys. But the last I heard, they were going to keep Jackson moving. Safer that way." "On the run," I say. "Yeah, been there." "One interesting fact I picked up," Malcolm lowers his voice, even though we're alone out here. "The president's daughter, Melanie? She's one of you." My eyebrows shoot up. "Get out. When does she report for duty?" Malcolm's smile tightens. "I don't think that's going to happen. But at least it means we've got the president on our side." "And Lawson reports directly to him." Sam brings his dad back to what we were originally talking about. "Ah, right. Well, he's a difficult man to read," Malcolm says thoughtfully. "Seems like a straight shooter, although the ruthlessly pragmatic type. A bit old school, as they say. At the very least, we all want the same thing." "Yeah, dead Moogs," I reply, and nod towards the conference room. "Let's see what he has to say." By the time we walk in, most of our group is already seated around a long, oval table. John sits at one end, slouching a little. Lexa sits next to him, the two deep in a hushed conversation. Lexa holds something out for John to inspect, and I recognize it as one of the cloaking devices we recovered in Mexico. That's our key to getting through the shields that surround every Moog warship. John's gaze flicks in my direction when I enter, and I practically freeze. He nods to me, though, and once I nod back, immediately returns to his conversation with Lexa. I guess we're staying focused on the task at hand and grieving later. Good. Nine sits on John's other side, and next to him is Ella. Her eyes haven't stopped glowing, which is drawing a lot of stares from the military personnel clustered in the room. As we take seats by them, Nine leans over to Ella.
"So light, Bright. Is this like a permanent thing now, or can you turn it off?"
I study Ella for a reaction. I'm happy to see a small and embarrassed smile cross her face. The girl used to have such a crush on Nine, and his complaining about her perpetual light show seems to get through. So there's still a little bit of the old Ella in there. Before responding to Nine, Ella concentrates, and the cobalt energy sparking around her chills out a little. "Better?" she asks him.
Just remind me to keep sunglasses handy when you're around, Nine replies. Ella smiles, this time more easily, and leans in Nine's direction.
Six,
Sam nudges me. This is Daniela. We met her in New York. Across the table from me sits the lean girl with braided hair who I noticed first in Ella's dream meeting and then again last night. She waves awkwardly, looking more than a little uncomfortable to be sitting in this room. Good to meet you, I say. Sam said you've already developed a legacy besides telekinesis. I shoot rays out of my eyes that turn things to stone, apparently, Daniela says warily. She tosses her head, her braids bouncing. Would have changed my hair up, at least, if I'd known you people were going to stick me with such a stupid superpower. I get it, Nine says, pointing at her. Because Medusa. Yeah, dummy, Daniela says, rolling her eyes. You got it. I like her, I say to Sam. Although no one forced us to choose seats at opposite ends of the table, there's a very clear line between us and the military personnel that outnumber us almost 3-1. They're all arranged at the far end where Lawson sits at the head. The closest one to our part of the table is Walker, a human buffer zone, seats empty on either side of her. She stares down at the notes in front of her, none of the other government types making any effort to chat with her. The twins take seats a little behind and on either side of Lawson. They look like bodyguards. Hell, it occurs to me that most of the people in this room are armed and would protect a guy like Lawson before us. Besides the official type sitting at the table, there's a bunch of straight-up soldiers hanging around against the walls, their rifles pointed down, but still very much loaded and ready. I'm pretty sure we could take this whole bunch, guns and all, but that doesn't mean I'm not a little concerned at being in close quarters with all this firepower. On the wall behind Lawson, there's a huge touchscreen display with a map of the entire world. There are zones highlighted with ominous red heat signatures. New York City, Los Angeles, London, and about 20 more. Those must be where Cetricus Ra's warships are posted. Then, in the United States only, there are a bunch of green dots, much smaller than the warships, but numerous. As I look closer, I realize that those dots all form loose circles around the Mogadorian hotspots. These must be the cells that Caleb was talking about, small but organized and ready to strike back. When I look down from the display, I catch Lawson studying me. He's been watching me take stock of his map. He gives me a little nod before turning his attention to the rest of the room. I think we're about ready to get started, Lawson announces, his voice casual but carrying, with a soft southern accent. All the side conversations immediately cut off. I glance around. Mark and Adam still haven't showed up. I open my mouth to say something, but Lawson's speech is already underway. For those of you who don't already know me, my name is General Clarence Lawson. The general clearly intends this for our group, since there's no doubt in my mind all the military and government flunkies know him well. Full authority has been granted to me by the President to coordinate the country's response to the Mogadorian invasion. Lawson pauses and waits for a response. None of us say anything. Personally, I'm not sure what he expects from us. Our own introduction? I glance down the table and see John staring straight at the general, waiting for him to continue. Lawson crosses his arms and clears his throat. You let me know if I move too fast for you, he says with a dry smile. I'm not a man who wastes his words, and I don't often find myself addressing matters of strategy to civilian teenagers, be they extraterrestrials or otherwise. You won't go too fast for us, John says, his gaze unwavering. Lawson nods once, then looks at the non-powered humans in the room. As for the rest of you, Keep in mind that these young people have likely killed more hostile aliens than all the branches of our armed service combined. Respect that, and respect their presence. I don't know what to make of this guy. One minute he's ragging on us for being young, and the next he's singing our praises at the expense of his people. Maybe he's just one of those dudes who tries to keep everyone on their toes through constant negativity. Lawson picks up a tablet device and hits a button. A countdown clock appears on the screen behind him, highlighted in red, and in the negative. We are approximately 10 hours beyond Cetricus Ra's deadline for unconditional surrender, which included a demand to turn over all so-called renegade guard as well as lanes. To our knowledge, only Moscow has complied with this ultimatum. The Russian government began arresting dozens of youths last night. Our agents report that many of them haven't even manifested legacies, and are likely anti-government agitators who the administration saw as an opportunity to get rid of while simultaneously placating the hostiles. Something will need to be done about that, John interjects. His voice is cool and authoritative. Agreed. Although humanitarian abuses by other governments will have to be back-burnered, Lawson replies. Frankly, we should consider ourselves lucky that only the Russians have kowtowed to the hostiles. We've been able to communicate with most of our international allies, and are encouraging them to evacuate the cities threatened by warships while covertly organizing counterstrike forces in the event we can crack the Mogadorian shields. However, if Cetricus Ra executes his promised attacks, and they're on the level of New York or Beijing, I'm not sure if these other countries will have the ability to stay the course. I think we can all agree that we're up against a ticking clock. It's not if Cetricus Ra makes good on his threats, but when. At the mention of New York, Daniela loudly clears her throat. John glances at her, then looks back at Lawson. What's this situation in New York? He asks. Same, Lawson replies. Mogadorian ground troops hold Manhattan, with our forces working triage and evacuation in the outer boroughs. Also not a priority at the moment, unless the warship returns. Daniela doesn't react much to the news. At Lawson's assessment, her lips bend in a tight frown, and she drums her fingers on the table in front of her, like she needs to get some aggression out. I wonder if she lost family back in the city. I wonder if they're still trapped there. Are you tracking the Anubis? John asks. We are. After attacking your people in Mexico, the Mogadorian flagship did not return to New York. Our recon shows it holding in West Virginia over a mountain in Hawk's Nest State Park. Some MogPro agents who we've interrogated indicate this place is... Yeah, interrupts Nine, clearly bored. Most of us have had the shit luck to be stuck in the place once or twice. It's their big base. When Nine is done speaking, Lawson lets the ensuing silence linger. Behind him, the twins bristle at this breach of decorum. Lawson stares at Nine like he might an out-of-line cadet, but Nine doesn't even notice. He's right back to doodling explosions on a piece of U.S. Army stationery. We're aware of the base, John says diplomatically, or maybe just without any emotion. We infiltrated it once before, but we've never had the resources to properly attack it until now. Lawson nods at that, and seems about to respond. Before he can, I lean forward to look at Ella. Maybe she knows why he's parked himself in West Virginia and hasn't made good on any of his threats. Ella, why has Cetricus Ra stopped the Anubis there? What is he waiting for? All eyes turn to Ella, although a lot of the military people look uncomfortable to be gathering intelligence from a preteen girl sparking with otherworldly energy. Ella looks equally uncomfortable with all the attention, and she emits a harmless flare of lauric energy when she opens her mouth to respond. "Do you want..." She hesitates. "Do you want me to make contact with him?"
"Whoa, hold on," I say. "Can you do it without him knowing?" John asks Ella. "Without putting yourself in danger?"
"I think so. If I'm quick," Ella says. And then before anyone can protest, she closes her eyes. The glow emanating from her skin intensifies once again. Everyone in the room goes silent, watching Ella warily. It's a little bit like being at a seance.
"She's a telepath," Sam explains lamely, looking around at the baffled faces.
With a gasp, Ella opens her eyes. A whole lot of people jump, myself included. I can't help it. Ella's a little creepy.
"You okay?" John asks her.
She nods, taking a deep breath. "He almost sensed me," she says, a note of pride in her voice. "His mind is busy. He was hurt badly." Here Ella glances at me, and my stomach tightens. "His trueborn aides placed him in the vats to accelerate the healing process."
"They use the vats to grow their soldiers," John begins to explain to Lawson.
"We already know about the vats," he says, waving this off. "Do you have any idea when he'll be done with whatever he's doing? When the attacks will resume?" Ella shakes her head. "His wounds were almost fatal," she says. "They would have killed someone without his augmentations."
I feel a brief swelling of pride at that. Pride and a massive ache of missed opportunity. If I'd only hit him a little harder.
"We talking hours? Days? A week?" Lawson persists. "I can't be sure. More than hours, I'd guess, but probably not days."
Ella cocks her head, remembering another detail that clearly troubles her.
"There are also others down there with him."
"In the vats?" John asks.
"Yes," Ella replies.
Nine makes a face. "Like floating in goop together? Damn, that's nasty."
"The vats work differently than before, now that they're powered with what he stole from us," Ella continues. "While he heals, Cetricus Ra is also working. He is, I don't know exactly. These others with him, he is making them into something new."
"I don't like the sound of that." Judging by the faces around the table, no one does. I remember back to that vision of Cetricus Ra's past that we all shared, how hell-bent he was to grant people legacies. That's got to be what he's doing down there. Before I can say anything, Lawson butts in, his head cocked.
"What did Cetricus Ra steal from you?"
Ella first looks at me, then at John, like she's asking for permission to tell Lawson that Cetricus Ra mined a bunch of lauric energy from the ground in Mexico. I don't know how honest we're supposed to be with these people. My instinct is, not very. I'm sure everyone on our side of the table has figured out what that scumbag is up to, but it doesn't seem wise to share that information with the military. No need to freak them out any more than we need to, or give them any ideas about what's possible when you hideously exploit a resource. I'm relieved when John subtly shakes his head in response to Ella. Ella turns back to Lawson.
"Something precious to our people," she says.
Lawson seems to know there's more to the story, but he doesn't press the matter. Instead, he motions to one of the officers standing by the door. The guy immediately exits, off to fetch something for his boss. I get a sinking feeling. Mysterious hand signals are always a bad sign. "All right, then. If we're ready to discuss counter-strike opportunities," Lawson begins. "About time," mutters Nine. We should have all our intelligence assets available, Lawson finishes. At that moment, the officer who Lawson sent scurrying into the hall a second ago returns. He leads in two guards, both of them armed with assault rifles and in full combat gear. They don't take their eyes off the prisoner who stands between them, shackled hand and foot, looking close to exhaustion. It's Adam.